My conscience tells me clearly and certainly that I cannot prolong the bad dreams that continue to reopen a chapter that is closed.
Today, 40 years ago.
Now, therefore, I, Gerald R. Ford, President of the United States, pursuant to the pardon power conferred upon me by Article 2, have granted, and by these presents do grant, a full, free, and absolute pardon unto Richard Nixon.
President Gerald Ford issues his pardon of Richard Nixon there a month before, Ford said, the long national nightmare of Watergate was over. But it wasn't until 3 years after that that Richard Nixon himself made his first formal public apology to the nation in a 1977 interview with David Frost. Listen.
I let down my friends. I let down the country. I let down our system of government and the dreams of all those young people that ought to get into government but will think it's all too corrupt and the rest.
Of course, that apology from Richard Nixon there came years after the pardon, after Nixon's crimes had already been forgiven, at least legally. But it got us thinking about this notion of forgiveness, public forgiveness versus private forgiveness, and what it really means to forgive and to move on.
This is Pat calling from Dallas, Texas. I forgave my father at age 35 for being a lifelong alcoholic. Shortly thereafter, he quit drinking and has been sober and a mentor for the last 27 years.
Well, joining me now from our partner WGBH in Boston is Charles Griswold. He's professor of philosophy at Boston University and co-editor of Ancient Forgiveness, Classical, Judaic, and Christian. Professor, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're not a political scientist, and you don't have to be, but you are an expert on forgiveness. We just played the pardon from Gerald Ford. As an instrument of forgiveness, did it work?
Well, I don't think that pardon is an instrument of forgiveness. I think that pardon and forgiveness are two different notions. They're in the same family of concepts, and they overlap in some ways, but they also differ importantly.
Well, isn't a pardon a form of institutional forgiveness? I mean, Ford said the country needs to move on, needs to get past things. It doesn't mean that all the voters were not mad anymore, but as a governmental instrument or a political cultural instrument, I suppose, is the question.
I wouldn't refer to it as an instrument of forgiveness, although forgiveness is sometimes used in political or judicial contexts. I think a lot is to be gained by keeping these notions distinct and separate from each other.
Well, if it's not forgiveness, what is it then?
Well, it's pardon exercised under the authority granted by the Constitution, as President Ford said, Article 2, Section 2. But as you also noted, it doesn't involve, for example, the giving up of anger or resentment on the part of those who were harmed. And that is one of the ways in which pardon differs from forgiveness.
That's an important ingredient, that anger or desire or like the right of revenge is given up.
I think so. I mean, in what I would call the model or the paradigm case of forgiveness, the case in which the heart of the matter is best illustrated, forgiveness is interpersonal. It involves two people, one of whom has wronged the other. And forgiveness is in part a moral and spiritual response by the victim to the wrongdoer that is offered in light of steps that the wrongdoer takes, among other things. And I would also argue that for forgiveness to come off fully, the victim must also not only moderate his or her anger or resentment, to use an older term, but also commit to letting go of any lingering resentment.
And is that really the point, so that resentments or animosities don't linger for generations? I mean, I was kind of thinking about forgiveness in terms of, you know, if we all lived in a village or something, and I kind of thought, well, what's the point? If you wrong me and I forgive you, is it for me so I can feel better? Is it for our village so that you and I aren't at war forever? I mean, what's the point of even having it?
I don't think the point is primarily utilitarian, so to speak. It's not about, in the first instance anyways, the greater good, although in fact it may redound to the greater good. And I also don't think that forgiveness is fundamentally a therapeutic issue. It's not about making yourself feel less of the toxic anger, although that is a consequence of it, and it's a good consequence of it. But I don't think that that's the point of it. The relation between the victim and the offender is a moral relation, and what's going on in forgiveness, I think, is in part a holding responsible of the of the offender by the victim. And this is connected with the steps that I think the offender should take, at least in the ideal case, to really be worthy of forgiveness. And it's also about the affirmation of certain kinds of moral ideals. And these ideals are ideals of reconciliation, of peace, of spiritual growth on the part of the individuals, and of the possibility of a kind of new start, of, if you like, a rebirth.
Professor Charles Griswold from Boston University, you know, we could spend an hour or more talking about the different kinds of forgiveness and how to do it and why it's important, and even about religious forgiveness. But we do have to touch on that, because I think as we have this discussion, so many people think about their religious traditions of forgiveness. And you know, there's been a lot of writing suggesting that some of the religious forms of forgiveness take the Christian form, vicarious redemption or acknowledging a sin against God gets you forgiven, that it actually has an immoral element to a lot of people. You can't have your responsibility taken away by just saying sorry or just going in a confession booth or some other form. Is there some truth to that, do you think?
Well, a lot depends on here on exactly how you understand the relevant theology. But given the sorts of assumptions you were just making, I think that there is a worry that forgiveness will collapse into excuse. And in order to be forgiven, I would submit that one has to take certain kinds of steps that go beyond a kind of insincere, I'm sorry. One also has to be sincere about that, and one has to take responsibility and really apologize and repudiate what you did, and become the kind of person who won't do that again, or at least commit to becoming that kind of person. Otherwise, it's hollow, and it's no longer a virtue. In the case of the religious conception that you were just sketching, there is a concern that you're let off the hook, or you might be let off the hook a bit too easily.
Forgiveness and the notion of it is complicated and gray and has a long history, and we just wanted to touch on it a little bit with Charles Griswold, and it seems that no matter what form of forgiveness you subscribe to, doing the work to get to forgiveness, both for yourself and for somebody who's wronged you, is really the most important part. Right, Professor?
I would agree with that entirely, and I would add that that's one of the reasons why I'm quite skeptical of the notion of unilateral or unconditional forgiveness, where the victim simply forgives the offender regardless of what the offender does. That seems to me to be very close to simply excusing the offender or letting the offender off the hook.
Charles Griswold is professor of philosophy at Boston University. He's co-editor with David Constant of Ancient Forgiveness, Classical, Judaic, and Christian. Professor, forgive me for making you hang on the radio for so long.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.